America Akbar.
But our current best assessment, based on the information that we have at present, is that in fact what this began as was a spontaneous, not a premeditated, response to what had transpired in Cairo.
But the only edits made by anyone here at the White House were stylistic and non-substantive.
If people don't think that we did everything we can to make sure that we saved the lives of folks who I sent there and who were carrying out missions on behalf of the United States, then you don't know how our Defense Department thinks or our State Department thinks or our CIA thinks. Their number one priority is obviously to protect American lives. That's what our job is.
And the only edit made by the White House or the State Department to those talking points generated by the CIA was a change from referring to the facility that was attacked in Benghazi from consulate, because it was not a consulate, to diplomatic post. I think I had referred to it as just diplomatic facility. I think it may have been to diplomatic post. But the point being, it was a matter of non-substantive factual correction.
Immediately upon finding out that our folks were in danger, that my orders to my national security team were, do whatever we need to do to make sure they're safe.
And we were prepared to respond to any contingency, and certainly had forces in place to do that. But there's a basic principle here. Basic principle is that you don't deploy forces into harm's way without knowing what's going on, without having some real-time information.
The minute I found out what was going on, I gave three very clear directives. Number one, make sure that we are securing our personnel and doing whatever we need to. Number two, we're going to investigate exactly what happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. Number three, find out who did this so we can bring them to justice.
Again, with regards to these stories, to our knowledge, we're not aware of any agency that has blocked an employee who would like to appear before Congress.
I'm not familiar with this notion that anybody's been blocked from testifying.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
But let's be clear. Benghazi happened a long time ago.
Death is a part of life.
Kill some Americans. Kill some Americans. Kill some Americans. Kill some Americans. Kill some Americans.
Speaking truth to power on the radio. A light up in the soul to his fellow men down. America above. Fellow.
Welcome, fellow infidels, to another episode of America Akbar. It is 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Do you know where your rabbi is? Anybody? For some reason, the rabbi is missing in action. But, as usual, nonetheless, we have... Hello, Reese.
Hello.
Oh, gee, that was real exciting. Let's try that again. Hello, Reese.
Hello.
How are we doing, Reese?
We're doing well. We're doing well. Tired, but doing well.
So do you happen to know where your favorite rabbi is?
I don't.
This is very interesting. And I bet anyone in the chat room might be able to type an answer as to where the rabbi is. Because he has become a regular fixture here. And I wonder how many people actually that are listening to the show paid attention to that intro, because I didn't see one comment in the chat room about it. They're talking about...
I saw several comments.
Oh, no, tractors and kosher foods and sticking out of their tongues and biting their tongues. I don't know. I know I saw the word tongue in there. I don't know what they were saying, but...
They're biting their tongue through the intro because it's such an awful... I mean, it's not an awful intro, but it's... What that was stated was, you know, just you have to bite your tongue or shriek at it. So that's what the biting the tongue thing was about.
Well, we're going to play it again later without the music at the end of it, because I want to tear it apart and want to explain to people some of the things that they may not have noticed until it's all put together like that in a montage, because it's really important to listen to some of the things that are said as to how they contradict each other. And it'll be more... understandable once I replay it and everybody's paying attention. Anyway, We have a last-minute guest coming on tonight at 9 o'clock. And tonight we're going to be joined by Shane Krauser, who is the director of the American Academy for Constitutional Education. And he's going to discuss his personal experience with the IRS and his organization. He just wrote an article, which was in the Daily Caller just yesterday. Now, along with being the director of the American Academy for Constitutional Education, he is widely sought after due to his expertise. He's an adjunct professor of constitutional and criminal law. He's a certified NRA firearms instructor, the chief instructor of K-Force Vanguard, a former prosecutor, and a partner at the law firm of Davis Miles McGuire Gardner. He's also the author of a book, Your Nation to Save, and even is a radio talk show host out in Arizona on 960 AM, The Patriot, and his show can be heard every Saturday night, Arizona time, 5 to 7 p.m. And the reason I say Arizona time is because they don't change their clocks, so depending on where you are, you have to figure it out yourself. So, anyway, I'm really beginning to worry about the rabbi. I doubt if he's on his tractor at this hour because it's probably dark where he is. But that is our guest. Then, Reese, I have a surprise.
What's that?
I did an interview with President Obama. I'm going to play
You're
it tonight.
Lucky. Oh, no, I'm so excited.
Why does she not believe? You don't believe me.
I do.
No, you don't. I can tell by your voice. I didn't want to tell anybody because I had to go by myself. Nobody else was allowed to enter with me into the White House. I was given 5 minutes, and this is going to be really awesome. I'm going to play it tonight, probably in the middle of our news, so everybody has to pay attention. But it ran a little longer than 5 minutes. Needless to say, Obama wasn't very happy with me, and it's about 7 minutes long, and I'm going to play that interview for the first time. You guys will hear it right here tonight. And Risha, I got to admit, you know, being that well, you know how I feel about Obama, but the White House is really cool.
Oh, I'm sure it's beautiful.
But anyway, so, all right, so people in the chat room are telling me they messaged the rabbi, as well as hang on to your seats, this is going to be funny. Why does nobody believe that I actually got an invite to the White House?
I believe you.
There's this new thing that Obama's doing where he's giving, like, unknowns a chance to interview him. Little did he know what Gotti was going to be like. So this is going to be really, really, really good. Anyway, so let us play before we go any farther, and I just want to grab the link so that I can put it in the chat room. Before we go into our regular news, I want to play our news direct from Israel, from Israel Today magazine, and there is the link in the chat room. And let me find Jonathan David. Here it is, today's news live from Israel.
Reporting from the Israel Today newsroom for American Akbar with Gadi Edelman. From Jerusalem, I'm Jonathan David. A suspected arms depot at the international airport in Damascus was hit in a pinpoint aerial strike on Wednesday. While Israel refused to comment on the incident, there is widespread understanding that only Israel could have carried out such a precision operation. It is believed that the destroyed structure was housing advanced weapons waiting to be transported from the Syrian regime to Lebanon's Hezbollah terrorist organization. Embattled Syrian dictator Bashar Assad has threatened to hand over his entire arsenal, including his huge stockpile of chemical weapons, to Hezbollah should his regime fall. Hours after the airstrike, several mortar shells were fired from Syria into Israel's Golan Heights. Such cross-border incidents have been the norm. Israeli officials are increasingly convinced the attacks are deliberate. Israeli messianic believers in Yeshua from across the country gathered in the Jerusalem area village of Yad Hashmona on Wednesday to mark the biblical festival of Shavuot. Shavuot is one of Israel's most revered biblical holidays, as it commemorates, among other things, the giving of God's word at Mount Sinai. The holiday has entered the Christian calendar as Pentecost.
the day of the outpouring of God's Spirit on the local body of Yeshua's followers in Jerusalem. So for Israeli believers, Shavuot is doubly important. As with every year, hundreds of Messianic Jews and Christians living in Israel made their way to Yad Hishmona for the festive event. Among those addressing the gathering was a Ugandan pastor who 2 years ago had acid poured over his head by an angry Muslim gang. He is currently living in Israel to undergo treatment in Tel Aviv. The African visitor said he was raised a Muslim who hated the Jewish state, but after finding the Bible realized that every passage made clear that the God of Israel is the one and only true God. From Jerusalem, I'm Jonathan David. Stay informed. Pray informed. Check out IsraelToday.com.
Thank you, Jonathan David. Boy, you know, in a way, Reese, pardon me, and I have to turn on your mic. In a way, Reese, I'm kind of glad that the rabbi wasn't here for that part because I hadn't listened to today's news yet, and he would be slamming his fist into the desk if he heard anything about Messianic Jews. So I'm kind of glad that it was good timing that he wasn't here tonight. Somebody in the chat room said that it's still Shavuot, which obviously Jonathan David also just said. So that may very well be the reason that the rabbi's not in, but I will find out later because to the best of my knowledge, he is allowed to do things. It's not like the Sabbath as far as that goes. So anyway, let me give out the phone number. I see there's already one caller, and if you guys do want to get on the air, you need to push the number one button. It looks like a straight line, top left-hand corner, for those that call in that want to go on the air that never remember to push that button. I'm kind of just giving you a little bit of instruction there. Anyway, the phone number is 347-857-1380. And I don't know what happened, Reese, to my little, I can't think of the word, my Trade Martin sound effect with our phone number. I can't find it. That's probably right on top, too. It is right on top. Here it is.
Let me area code 347-857-1380. Radio Jihad.
What's this Radio Jihad crap? We don't want to associate with those guys. Come on now. We've got our own show.
Yes, on their network.
Don't tell anybody. They don't know. 347-857-1380. Well, I at least I now know that Vito and Alan are not hiding behind the name Guest, so because they would definitely chime in on that one. But anyway, to everybody in the chat room, hello. And I would like, before we go into the news, let's see, how many people do we have right now? Not many. Okay. All right. We got to fill up a little bit. Everybody go, leave, and come back with a friend. All right? Now, what I want to is I'd like to replay the intro, and I want everybody to listen to it really carefully because this is a montage, as Rush Limbaugh or Neil Bortz or whoever would call it. It's a montage of, you'll hear Susan Rice from her five different talk shows. Of course, thank God we only have to listen to her once. You will hear Jay Carney. You will hear President Obama. You will hear Leon Panetta. You will hear back and forth a lot of Jay Carney and Obama in the middle, and then you'll hear former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and, of course, Jay Carney again. And then the last one is Representative Mullins, and he's talking during the Benghazi hearings that were held last week. And I want you to listen to this montage, but really listen to the words. Don't listen to what they're saying. Listen to the words they choose. And then when we come back, I will, right afterwards, I'm going to go through this, and I want to explain a couple of really important things that you may have missed, because it's not until they're all put together that you can hear how they're contradicting one another, or for that matter, contradicting things that have come out since these things were recorded. So forgive me in the beginning. It is going to say America Akbar because it is our new intro to the show, but I will cut off the end of it where you hear the music. So everybody listen to this montage real quick.
America Akbar!
But our current best assessment, based on the information that we have at present, is that in fact what this began as was a spontaneous, not a premeditated, response to what had transpired in Cairo.
But the only edits made by anyone here at the White House were stylistic and non-substantive.
If people don't think that we did everything...
Okay. I got to stop it right there. We'll start it over. I apologize. The first thing you have is Susan Rice. We all know, and forgive me, people, because I am trying to eat dinner while on the radio, and I know that's poor etiquette, but too bad I'm hungry. We all know, because of the emails, because of the whistleblowers that came forward, we all know already, we've known for a long time, but now we factually know, that our government, the Obama administration, was well aware of the fact that this was a terrorist attack when they were out there hyping the video. So the first thing you have is Susan Rice saying, what we currently know, our best assessment is that this was a spontaneous reaction that broke out of this protest, out of this riot, out of these people that were protesting, much like what happened in Cairo. Now, she's out there days after the emails had come back and forth between the administration, the State Department, and the CIA, where the CIA blatantly stated factually this was terrorism. But then on the next segment, right where I stopped it, you have Jay Carney, the press secretary, saying, well, you know, yeah, there were changes made, but only one. And that only change was stylistic. It was just, you know, we changed the word one or two. It was stylistic. So let's listen to this again, and I won't stop it until we're probably midway through or all the way through at this point. Leon Panetta, you got to listen to him when he comes on.
America Akbar!
But our current best assessment, based on the information that we have at present, is that in fact what this began as was a spontaneous, not a premeditated, response to what had transpired in Cairo.
But the only edits made by anyone here at the White House were stylistic and non-substantive.
If people don't think that we did everything we can to make sure that we saved the lives of folks who I sent there and who were carrying out missions on behalf of the United States, then you don't know how our Defense Department thinks or our State Department thinks or our CIA thinks. Their number one priority is obviously to protect American lives. That's what our job is.
And the only edit made by the White House or the State Department to those talking points generated by the CIA was a change from referring to the facility that was attacked in Benghazi from consulate, because it was not a consulate, to diplomatic post. I think I had referred to it as just diplomatic facility. I think it may have been to diplomatic post. But the point being, it was a matter of non-substantive factual correction.
Immediately upon finding out that our folks were in danger, that my orders to my national security team were, do whatever we need to do to make sure they're safe.
And we were prepared to respond to any contingency, and certainly had forces in place to do that. But there's a basic principle here. Basic principle is that you don't deploy forces into harm's way without knowing what's going on, without having some real-time information.
The minute I found out what was going on, I gave three very clear directives. Number one, make sure that we are securing our personnel and doing whatever we need to. Number two, we're going to investigate exactly what happened to make sure it doesn't happen again. Number three, find out who did this so we can bring them to justice.
Again, with regards to these stories, to our knowledge, we're not aware of any agency that has blocked an employee who would like to appear before Congress.
I'm not familiar with this notion that anybody's been blocked from testifying.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
But let's be clear. Benghazi happened a long time ago.
Death is a part of life.
Kill some Americans, kill some Americans, kill some Americans, kill some Americans, kill some Americans.
Okay, so hopefully everybody heard, pardon me, hopefully everybody heard Leon Panetta and recognized his voice in there. Leon Panetta is the Secretary of Defense, and he stated that we had See, now I'm going to have to go back and play it again. Reese, do you remember the exact word he used as far as having the military, the mechanism to, he used the word mechanism, but he was talking about that we have the military to handle situations such as this, and they were ready. Did you hear his wording on that?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how he worded it, but yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it.
What he said there was, we have the resources, and they were ready to go. That's what he said. And he followed it up with, however, you need to remember that you don't send the military into harm's way without having more information as to what's going on. That is a total, total 180 opposite of what we've been hearing from Obama, from Jay Carney, and from all these so-called higher-ups in the military about we couldn't got there in time. Really? Because that's not what Leon Panetta said. He said we had the mechanism to get them there, we had the resources, and they were ready. But we didn't send them in because you don't send them in unless you have a better idea with the information of what's going on the ground. More intelligence. Well, I'm here to tell you folks, having served where I've served, including the American military, having enough friends in the service, I know one thing. That's what they're trained for. They do it all the time. The Delta Force and the SEALs were both developed back in the 1970s for that specific reason. If we had to know what was going on, we would have lost World War II. And I wouldn't even be here. And most of you guys would be speaking German if you're even around. I mean, think about how stupid that statement is. We're not going to send in the military unless we have more intel and really know what's going on. Back in the day, one of the famous quotes, we're going to go way back in history to tell you how long it's been this way. Napoleon made a famous statement. When one of his people asked him, "How will I find you? Where will you be?" He said, "Follow the sound of the gunfire." That's what the military does. They go into areas not always knowing. That's why we train them the way we do. Hell, if we had intel the way Panetta's talking, every time we sent these boys and girls into harm's way, they wouldn't need to be trained. They go in there blind. Every one of these missions, they go in there blind. Not every mission. I'm referring to this type of mission. That's what these teams that the State Department has. You've heard the term thrown around, the FAST team. These fast action assault teams. The SEALs. The Delta Force. The security teams. That's what they are trained for. Here's the situation. Here's where it is. Here's a blueprint of our building. There's some intel. And we're going to drop you in right here. And they go and they save lives. But how is it that everybody in the Obama administration all of a sudden became Miss Cleo and became clairvoyant? Because the first thing I want to know is, how did they know they wouldn't get there in time when they had no idea how long the battle would last? Was that an assumption on their part? Oh, well, we're just finding out about it. The battle's been going on for about a half hour or an hour or so. So, yeah, probably they'll be dead before we get anybody there. Well, I'll tell you what. If that was their decision-making process, then, A, they weren't giving enough credit for the people that were on the ground that kept it at bay for 8, 9 or more hours. The two former Navy SEALs that died protecting these people. They didn't give enough credit to their own people. Because remember, they were told to stand down, defied orders, and went anyway. They were a mile away at a CIA safe house. And when they heard the cries for help, they went. They said, "Screw you, we're here, we're going." And they fought to get there, and they fought to get back. So was that the decision that was made? Oh, we don't have time to make it there before they're all dead. Which is it? You couldn't get there in time, or you didn't have enough intel on the ground? Because you had two former SEALs on cell phones, secure cell phones, giving instructions, saying where the team was, the mortar team, the Al-Qaeda-linked Ansar al-Sharia group, painting them with a laser, as we hear the military terminology, which means pointing a laser beam at them so that a jet, an American plane, could fly over and take them out. Didn't give credit to our guys. You were guessing how long it would go on? Because intel obviously wasn't the issue. Not when you got two SEALs on a rooftop telling you where everything is. So Panetta lied. Or else, they made one hell of a stupid calculated mistake, which is so ignorant it's beyond belief, which is, well, we won't make it in time. They'll be dead by the time we get there. Really? I guess you don't care about bringing back bodies then either. Since when does our military question whether or not there will be survivors? Those are Americans screaming for help. You go. And you deal with the situation when you get there. Am I right, Reese? You're married to a man in the Army. Mm-hmm. You're a military wife. You know how this is.
Mm-hmm.
Every time your husband goes away in the service, you don't know whether or not he's coming home because he may end up in that type of situation. You know that and face that every time you kiss him goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
This is BS what's coming out of this administration right now. It goes far beyond the IRS and far beyond the AP phone grab, which, by the way, I spoke to the president about during our interview. And wait until you hear these answers. Oh, my God, I should have played the Gotti rant before that because I'm already out of breath. And then Clinton, did everybody listen to her choice of words? This is very telling. Here's Hillary Clinton, Teflon Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
She reminds me of Teflon Obama. Nothing is sticking to her. She gave two options when she was sitting in that witness chair, being spoken to, being grilled by members of Congress and Senate on the Benghazi hearings the first time around. And she gave two choices. Subliminal message to the American people. What difference does it make if it was just some guys out for a walk or some protesters who decided to kill some Americans? Well, excuse me, Hillary. It was neither. And you knew it was neither. It was neither some protesters or just some guys out for a walk one night who decided to kill some Americans. You knew damn well it was neither. But she didn't add to that, or terrorists. No, this is how the Obama administration plays their word game. That's a subliminal message. That's planting the seed to everybody who heard her testimony. You've got two choices. Either it was protesters, or it was just some guys out for a walk one night. And in the meantime, what difference does it make? That whole thing was rehearsed, and you could tell it was rehearsed, by watching her actions, by looking at her hand movements. I guarantee you, she rehearsed that, was waiting for the opportune moment to utilize that line, and she got it out there. And then Jay Carney, in the second half that I played, he went beyond saying it was stylistic changes. Then he said, oh, well, we only changed one word. We changed the word consulate to diplomatic post. Really? Because the emails are out there, and I've seen the changes. And after 12 back-and-forth changes, somehow the entire whole paragraph that was the original CIA talking points, you know, the Central Intelligence Agency, the group that is supposed to tell you what's going on, somehow their entire paragraph of Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists was removed. That wasn't political. A week before the election, that wasn't political. And Obama's going to stand there and bold-faced lie to the American people and the world and say, how dare you accuse me of that? You're damn right we're accusing you of that because we know that's what it was. Either you were totally incompetent, you made the wrong decision, You pulled out their security ahead of time. You didn't care that they were going to die. Pick any of the above. Either way, it was a political move on your part. You had an election coming up a week later, and you didn't want, since you've been touting the whole year during your election, that you had Al-Qaeda on the run. Al-Qaeda's on the run. They're not the group they used to be. Yeah, and I killed Osama bin Laden. Really, were you there? Because I don't remember you being there. I didn't even see you in the movie, come to think of it. You didn't want the truth about terrorism on the anniversary of 9/11. Hello, how much more obvious could you be? Talk about an intelligence failure. You didn't want the truth to come out that Al-Qaeda was behind it, because it would blow your chances for re-election. That's the whole thing in a nutshell. You can throw all the other conspiracy theories away, including the ones I espouse to. Kidnapping gone bad. Arms dealing. Everything else. Doesn't matter. This was a political move first and foremost. That is a fact. And it is, by the way, also a fact we do know that Christopher Stevens, later ambassador to Libya, was, back in March 2011, before he was named to be ambassador, was running arms for the United States, arms, military equipment, food and supplies, and money to the Libyan Free Army. We know that for a fact. That's come out. You can find it at the government websites. Don't take Gotti's word for it. And he did it from the exact same diplomatic post building in Benghazi where he died. We know he asked for more security. We know he was screaming for more security. And I hope each and every one of you watched the witnesses, the whistleblowers that came forward last week, and you're talking about it with your friends, your family, and your relative, because this will not die. Every one of us here that I'm aware of at Radio Jihad has been on this Benghazi thing since the start. Yeah, here and there, we'll forget about it for a week or two, but it hasn't gone away. And I pride myself on that. I said that this was a terrorist act less than 12 hours after it happened. Again, don't take my word for it. Go look at the video. YouTube is kind enough to post the date and time that I put it up there, September 12th. And I said, you can bet your sweet ass Al-Qaeda was behind it. Now, how did I know it? But it took 6-7 weeks for the government to admit it. We haven't let go of this. And this could be, if you don't like the current administration, you don't like what you see happening to the United States of America, this could be the beginning of the end for Obama. Or at least a change that will take place within his administration that will at least make it bearable for the next 3 years. But only if we talk about it and keep bringing it up. Tonight, our guest, Sean, when he comes on, is going to tell us about the IRS. And I have a story about my own personal experience, about articles I was writing. And I can't mention the name of the outlet, but they're big. They're huge. And whenever I use the word Obama, they would either take the whole sentence out or change it to the administration. They had to edit my things. Edit every one of my articles whenever I spoke about the president, because they were targeted by the IRS, so much so that they were in the IRS offices twice, two different occasions where they were asked to come in and the IRS threatened to pull their 501c4 because they had become so political. They're a magazine. It's called Freedom of the Press. It's called freedom of speech. My articles got changed. And I fought. Reese, I know you remember this. I fought with them tooth and nail. I was so pissed. I pulled an article from them at one point, and it only ended up on my website. Do you remember, Reese? I was venting you that day to you. Because I had the president of that magazine on the phone and got into a verbal argument until she finally came clean and admitted to me, we are afraid. We rely solely on donations, and the IRS has threatened us. We cannot print what you are writing unless you either take that sentence out or change the word Obama to administration. We're going to hear more about that in our 9 o'clock hour with our guest. Anyway, Reese, why don't we take our first quick break? Hey, I made a poem. And when we come back, I can do the news. I've got two pieces of domestic news, kind of relates to what we'll be talking about, and then two pieces of international news. And then it'll be around 9 o'clock, and we can bring our guest on.
Oh, excellent. Well, I know you love your Madison Rising, so we're going to do Madison Rising first up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, remember this song, Where Was the Media Then? Well, I've been saying that for I don't know how long. I know you have been. But this week has been the explosion of the media going, what? Well, if you've been paying attention, people, you wouldn't have gotten blindsided by your own brown nosing, I think is the nice way of putting it.
No, you know what it was, Reese? Reese, I got to interrupt because I was screaming at the TV out of excitement, and I wish I knew who the guy was. When he nailed Jay Carney to the wall in a press conference 2 days ago, and Jay Carney said no one in their administration had anything to do with the AP story, with the phone calls. But he said he couldn't discuss it because it was still under investigation. They won't discuss it until all the facts come in. And he nailed him to the wall. He said, wait a minute. You just unequivocally stated nobody in the White House or your administration had anything to do with it. But now you're saying you don't have all the facts. Which is it? And he said, well, from what we know, he said, no. And he interrupted him. That's not what you said. You said no one in the White House, no one in the administration. It was unequivocal. You stated it, and now you're saying you don't have all the facts. You can't have it both ways. And I'm screaming and yelling and clapping, bravo, it's about time. You know what it was? It wasn't that they were blindsided. All of a sudden, it was them being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Bet your
they put their blinders on.
Shaking in their boots right now whether or not their phone calls have been monitored.
Oh, yeah. It's they put on their blinders and hope to goodness sakes that they don't look. It's like the dogs. Whenever you have something in your hand, the dogs say, or you want them for something. Well, if I don't look at her, she won't make me move. If I, you know, and it's that whole thing. If I don't look, it is not real. And that's just it, is that they have chosen to ignore the reality in front of them because they don't want to believe it and they don't want people to know about it. And here they are. They're the ones that are under attack. So now all of a sudden they're wigging out about it. Well, guess what? So I just thought, where was the media then?
Oh, absolutely.
Way to start the show. What do you think?
It's perfect because now all of a sudden, instead of using the term wigging out, I'd say now all of a sudden they're actually doing their job and becoming reporters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad, isn't it?
I love it. I'm glad that it finally happened. At least it didn't wait to the end of his term. All right, so we will see
you. Don't hold the breath. It won't last long.
Remember, if you're calling in, because I see a couple of callers called in, if you're just listening, that's fine. If you want to get on the air, please press number one so we know that you want to come on. And we'll be back right after Madison Rising.
Where was the media then? You can find them over at madisonrising.com.
Our every move, we're waiting for that one mistake, some footage they can use. Just fear the ones they fear the most, the ones that they despise, and fill the mind a spiteful bomb with anger, hate, and lies. Exploit the children and public the weak and rob the masses again. Justify. Where was the media then? Tell us why. Where was the media then? With every time the truth came out, where was the media then? After 50 years of all your lies, where was the media then? When vegans killed in the name of peace, holy men cursed the whites, beheadings in Afghanistan, they vilify the right. Voter fraud just ignored, acorns don't exist. But when the lies
all exposed. It's murder, they insist. Exploit the children, and public the weak, and rob the masses again. Just a bomb. Where was the media then? Tell us why. Where was the media then? But every time the truth came out, where was the media then? Yes, the 50 years of all your life. Where was the media then?
Hypocrisy is all we see. Hostility and misery. Always condescendingly. Until your mind is numb. Defenders of the free. The fourth pillar they were meant to be. Masters of duplicity. The fifth column.
Where was the media then? Tell us why. Where was the media then? But every time the truth came out, where was the media then? Yes, the 50 years of all your life. Where was the media then?
Welcome, fellow infidels. Gadi Edelman here with America Akbar Radio. If you're only listening to the radio show, you are only getting a small piece of what we do around here. You need to get over to GadiEdelman.com, GadiEdelman.com. There you can read my weekly articles that come out every Monday. You can check out my videos, and you can link up to a bunch of other great sites and really stay on top of things. So, once again, for everybody here at America Akbar, keep on listening, and thanks for your support.
Hey, everybody, this is Dave Ray of Madison Rising, and you're listening to America Akbar with Gadi Edelman and Reese on Blog Talk Radio.
Back. Thanks, everybody, for hanging on through the break. I understand we have a caller on line three. Let me open up the microphone. Go ahead, Jenny. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dottie. I had a couple comments. One, I'm a military brat. My father was in the military. I was married to three men in the military. I had a cousin that was in the Marines. And I know when anyone in the military, whenever their spouse calls and says, I'm being deployed ASAP, I left you a power of attorney, you'll have to go pick it up. What that means is, I'm being sent out. I don't know where I'm going. Only the higher ups know where I'm going. I don't know if I'll ever see you again, but there's an insurance policy left in case I'd never come back. And right now, they're trying to say that the military spouses know more than the officials. Because that's about what they're saying. Whenever they keep on saying, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. What they're saying is the military spouses and the children of those soldiers have more information or are smarter than what they are. And they do send them in situations where the men don't know where they're going. The government don't know where they're going. That's why they're specially trained. That's why special forces learn hand-to-hand combat. They learn how to purify their own water and all this other stuff. because
no,
they don't know
you're right.
The situations.
You're absolutely right. And any military family, be it someone like you that was a military brat or someone like you that was married to someone in the service, male or female, knows this. Everybody, anybody who's served knows this. When you go into battle, you know, it doesn't even have to be a situation like Benghazi. When our military goes into battle, what intelligence do we have when they take a hill? What's on the other side of that hill outside of satellite pictures? Yeah, we can tell them what to expect as far as the terrain. We might be able to tell them whether or not there's an army on the other side waiting for them. But how much more intelligence do they really have? That's why they're called soldiers. That's what they're trained for. They go into situations every day where they don't know what's going to happen, and they are taught to what was the I'm going to have to ask Reese here because I know she might know the name of the movie because Reese is oh so good at remembering things.
Oh yeah,
Reese, there was a movie with Clint Eastwood where was it Hamburger Hill? It might have been called Hamburger Hill. Do you remember that movie?
Hamburger Hill.
Sounds like
that's it.
I think
yeah,
I don't watch military movies because it's too gruesome for me. But I think it is Hamburger Hill.
Well, there's a great line in that movie where he takes this ragtag bunch of delinquents and turns them into a true fighting group of Marines. And he constantly tells them, adapt and overcome. Adapt and overcome. You go into a situation, you don't know what it is, you adapt to that situation and you overcome it. And that's what the military teaches. That's what these guys are trained for. To hear the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, sitting there saying, well, you know, everybody needs to understand this one important point. You don't send them into harm's way without knowing. Bullshit! That is such a load of crap! And
what
you think the American people accepted that is what is even more... Ugh! I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jenny.
What are you training for? To hold the umbrella for the president? I'm sorry. That's
oh, you saw that today, too?
Yes.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. If we don't get to the news, we're not going to be done the news by the time my guest comes on at 9 o'clock. Let me, I'm going to put you back on hold, and you can stick around if you want, sweet pea. I appreciate you calling in, Jenny. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Reese, let's see if I can find my button to the news intro. Here it is.
It's now time for the national and international news here on America Akbar with Gadi Amin.
Okay, let's start with some national news. I love this headline. Witness protection lost track of known or suspected terrorists, and they let others board planes. The Justice Department temporarily lost track of two known or suspected terrorists who were in the witness protection program. Now, right there, I've got a rant. Why would we have two suspected terrorists in our witness protection program? Explain that sentence to me. Because if they're suspected of being terrorists, that means you're not sure. They're suspects. You're thinking they might be. So why in God's name would you give them the witness protection program? But let me read on. The Justice Department temporarily lost track of two known or suspected terrorists who were in witness protection and allowed others on the no-fly list to board commercial flights. This is according to a watchdog report, which fueled criticism of the administration. This is a gross mismanagement, pure and simple, according to Representative Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, and Reese, if I didn't pronounce his name right, you can correct me, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. The allegations were made in an Inspector General report, which was released today. The report found agencies in the department did not properly share the new identities of some in the witness protection program, and the lapse meant that those new names were then not updated into the no-fly list. Therefore, and this is a quote, therefore, it was possible for known or suspected terrorists to fly on commercial airplanes in or over the United States and evade one of the government's primary means of identifying and tracking terrorist movements and actions, quote, the report said. The report also said some in the program were able to do just that. Well, people wonder why I don't like to fly. Doesn't that just give you a warm and fuzzy? The Inspector General's office, and pardon me, I just lost my notes there. The Inspector General's office also said the U.S. Marshal Service, as of last July, was, quote, unable to locate two former participants who were known or suspected terrorists, and they were thought to be outside the U.S. The report said the department, quote, did not definitely know how many known or suspected terrorists had been admitted into the program either. How do you not know? What is going on with our security in this country? Maybe we should start calling it insecurity. Though the Justice Department says that these problems have in large part been corrected, Republicans seized on the report as yet another example of administration mismanagement. The DOJ is already under fire for seizing journalist phone records, while the IRS is facing criticism for a practice of singling out conservative groups. And I'm going to add to that Jewish groups and pro-Israel groups as well. Gulati said the latest report detailed behavior that has jeopardized American lives. Today's IG report shows that the Justice Department continues to repeat the same mistakes that were made prior to 9/11, he said, adding that his committee would be holding a hearing on the matter. The Justice Department began making changes in response to the report last year. The department says it is now sharing information on the new identities of those in the program with other agencies. We talked about this last week. This is exactly what was supposed to be avoided. This is what the Patriot Act and the whole development of Homeland Security under Bush after 9/11 was supposed to deter. These things were not supposed to happen anymore because according to the 9/11 report, according to actually factually what happened when it came to the guys, the 19 terrorists who flew planes into the World Trade Center towers, into a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and into the Pentagon, they were known by some organizations, CIA, FBI, that they were here, but they didn't let the other organizations, CIA or FBI, know they were here. And this is exactly what wasn't supposed to occur. That was the reason that the entire Homeland Security was developed. Anyway, the department also said in a letter to the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, that it has since, quote, identified, located, and minimized the threat of all former known or suspected terrorists in the program. That includes the two individuals the department temporarily lost track of. Justice Department officials said today that those individuals left the program and the country years ago and had made no effort to return to the U.S. They're not fugitives, one official said. Well, let me read into this between the lines, because had they been on the no-fly list, they wouldn't have been able to leave the country, and maybe they'd be in custody right now if they were suspected terrorists, you dumbass. Officials said that there is no threat to public safety, that's a quote, stressing that those in the program had been thoroughly vetted from the outset and that most were admitted before the September 11, 2001 attacks. Most? Did everybody catch that one sentence according to them? They've all been thoroughly vetted from the outset and that most of them were admitted, but not all of them, right? Both the department and the IG stressed that the Witness Protection Program has helped in major investigations, including that into the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. The department said the number of known or suspected terrorists in the program amounts to a fraction of a percent. But Republicans were not satisfied with these assurances. Quote, this is just another example of the Justice Department's ineptness at basic handling of an important program, said Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa, a top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said in a statement, these people may be in a witness protection program, but they were still known or suspected terrorists. It's only logical that the federal government know where they are. Gee, you think? I hope that all of you can sleep well tonight knowing the amount of things that we've discussed on this show about our Homeland Security. Next issue on the agenda, and I'm going to do it quick, and then we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we will have our guest on. Obama says that he didn't, and I quote, know anything about the probe into IRS targeting. President Obama insisted today that he knew nothing, knew nothing about the internal investigation into the IRS practice of singling out conservative groups for special scrutiny before it was made public, as he moved to name a new director for the embattled agency. Quote, I can assure you that I certainly did not know anything about the Inspector General's report beforehand, Obama said today. That was during the press conference that Jenny alluded to, where you saw a Marine holding an umbrella over the president. The president, though, did not say whether he was previously aware of the IRS actions, which allegedly started as early as 2010, well before the IG's office began to investigate. Republican lawmakers were inquiring about the alleged targeting of Tea Party groups by the IRS more than a year ago. Obama, who spoke during a press conference alongside the Turkish Prime Minister, focused his remarks specifically on the IG report, noting that he would have caught wind of that report since those investigations are typically kept under wraps. He reiterated that he found the agency's actions unacceptable and sought to fix the problem the minute he found out about it. Yeah, just like the minute he found out about Benghazi, he said three things. Secure our people. Yeah, we saw how well that went for him. The White House Press Secretary Jay Carney had previously said no one in the White House knew about the practice. The comments were the latest effort by the White House to tamp down the controversy. At his press conference, Obama announced the appointment of White House budget official Daniel Werfel as the next acting IRS commissioner. This comes after Obama announced yesterday that acting IRS Commissioner Steve Miller would resign, though Miller was apparently set to step down anyway. Yes, he didn't fire him. He asked him to resign, but it's no big deal. What difference does it make? He's going to resign next month. An official close to Miller told Fox News shortly after Obama's brief announcement that the IRS chief was set to resign the position of acting commissioner as early as June. He was planning to leave the IRS entirely a couple of months later, regardless of the current controversy. And from what I understand, Reese is telling me that we have a caller on the line. Comment on the article, the Witness Protection Program. I'll tell you what, Dave, if you can hold on for just a minute, we're going to go on a quick break. And when we come back, we will take your call. And Reese, if you would go check. You know what? I'll check 480 because I know who that is. If you'll go ahead and set us up for the break.
Absolutely. You know what? For several weeks, I've been trying to get this song out for everybody because, you know what? It's been a long time since we had a Corey Shore song, and this is one of my favorites of Corey's and one of his more recent songs, and it's called Wake Up, and you can find him at CoreyShore.com.
Can't hear. The world turned upside down. We'll lose. Every day another argument, and never reaching resolution. You don't care about the truth.
Hey everybody, this is Dave Bray from Madison Rising. Help Madison Rising keep the banner flying high and show everyone that you are one of the millions of hardworking people in this country that are still proud to be an American. Take the challenge at www.starspangledbannerchallenge.com. That's starspangledbannerchallenge.com.
It is Thursday between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern Time. What are you doing? Well, if you're like me, George from the American View, then you're listening to Gotti Edelman of American Art Bar. You know Gotti, short guy, reflection on top, the smart man.
Thank you, everybody, for hanging on through the break. And, Reese, I got to bring you on real quick because, Reese, I didn't recognize that music. Who was the band you were playing?
The one I just played?
Yeah, the one when, because I was on the phone with our guest in the back end, and I couldn't hear it until I came back.
That was Corey Shore.
Oh, that was Corey Shore. Oh, I'm sorry, Corey. Wonderful. All right. I didn't even recognize it. I caught the tail end of it, and the voice kind of threw me. So that was
yeah,
Corey Shore.
One more recent ones, because you know, after his voice has been changed. So,
that's right. He's going through that. He's going through that stage where his voice is changing. I keep forgetting how old he is. Anyway, we are back, and with me on the line, you know, at the top of the first hour, I talked about, and I said Sean. His name is Shane. Shane Krauser. And he is the director for the American Academy for Constitutional Education. And as I said, his article that he wrote about his experience with that organization on the IRS just appeared yesterday in the Daily Caller. And along with being the director of the American Academy for Constitutional Education, he is an adjunct professor of constitutional and criminal law, certified NRA firearms instructor, the chief instructor of K-Force Vanguard, a former prosecutor, and a partner with the law firm of Davis, Miles, McGuire, Gardner. He's also the author of the book, Your Nation to Save, and is a radio talk show host. So I've got some preparing to do here. I've got a real talk show host with us on 960 AM The Patriot out of Arizona every Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. Arizona time. Shane, welcome to the program.
Yachty, thank you so much for having me. It was quite an introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, I'll tell you what, the only thing I mess up on are these long attorney outfit names, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You've got to take a couple breaths sometimes when you get to talking about some of these law firms with all of their names. But, yeah, anyhow, glad to be with you. You were mentioning music a little bit earlier. I heard a little bit about Madison Rising. Those guys are incredible. What they're doing with music, and yeah, absolutely, just a great day in America.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm glad you know Madison Rising. I'm happy to say that we've not only had the whole band on the show all at once, but we had their manager with them, and he usually doesn't do interviews. So we've had Madison Rising here, and they are a great group of guys. They really are.
I absolutely envy you. The fact that you've had them on the program, their music is absolutely fabulous. They do a great job with their own little twists and turns on the Star Spangled Banner and other patriotic songs. That's great.
My favorite song of theirs, it's actually the ringtone on my telephone. And I'll tell you what, I'll give you a secret. If you kiss up to my producer, Reese, say hello. It's a little giggle. Just up to Reese. She's really good friends with Dave Bray and their manager, whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce because I always screw it up. What is his name again, Reese?
Richard Megradishian.
Megradishian, yeah. It's like the whole name, and he doesn't have one vowel in it.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to kiss up to her and see if we can make that happen. That's great that that you've gotten them on board, because I truly believe that if we're going to take back America, we've got to take the entertainment industry back. We've got to take the music industry back. We've got to take back our schools. We've got to take back restore this country back to its founding roots, and that is the roots founding the Constitution. So those things are great, what you're doing, and just fabulous work.
Wow, that was excellent. I wish I had my applause button handy. That was fantastic.
I know.
Love this guy already. I love this.
I know. And that's one of the things that we've tried for the past, 3 years now to do, is to give a voice to artists that are liberty-minded. And so that's what we do here is on our breaks. Everybody that is, we have our liberty-minded artists that are having a hard time getting their foot in the door. We give them a voice here on America Akbar, and we have for the past 3 years. Madison Rice, we played their song "Where Was the Media Then" in the first break. But in on the break of the half hour, if you're still around, I'd love you to listen to the next one, who is Chris Ross, and he's done a fabulous job with his music too.
Chris Rock and "Born Free" has to be one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, Chris Ross and not Rock.
You're talking about Kid Rock. Are you talking about Kid Rock or Chris Rock?
Chris Ross.
Okay. R-O-S-S.
Yeah.
All the artists that we have here on the program are conservative artists, for starters, and they're all, they all have their own CDs out or their own website or both. And we have their permission, and thank God they all have heard the show, at least to the best of my knowledge. Many of them are fans, including Madison Rising. And, so we give them a voice. Like Reese was saying, we only play conservative music on our breaks.
Well, it's nice to hear that another talk show program actually gets it, because I'll tell you, my belief is that a lot of the conservative libertarian talk show hosts don't quite get it. It's not enough to simply talk about the message and articulate the message beautifully. Yeah. We've got to bring in other things, other components, to truly bring on individuals that are not politically active, but can we use things and various instruments to really get them excited about the message of America? And it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll hook up an email, and I will give you a list of my friends that are liberty-minded entertainers. And that way they'll give you a foot in the door. And you obviously know quite a few anyway, but this will give you even more to work with on your side of things.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, since we've spent the last couple of minutes only kibitzing, as I would call it, and you work for a law firm with some Jewish names in there, so I'm assuming you know what kibitzing means. But, Risa, you remember Lisa Benson. She's been on the show a couple times. Well,
yes.
The station that Shane works out of, 960, or is it 980? 960, The Patriot in Arizona, is where Lisa
That's
has her
me.
Show now.
Yes, I know. I saw that.
So he knows Lisa, too, which is really awesome.
Yeah, Lisa Benson, I believe, is now co-hosting a program on Sunday afternoons with,
yes.
I'm not remembering the other co-host, but yeah, she's on Sundays, 9:60 a.m. The Patriot right here in Phoenix, and
yes,
very politically active.
Very active, and I believe the name of her show is National Security.
Right.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, let's talk about you for a change instead of all of us, and I want to find out, with your organization, and you can tell everybody, and Reese will type it up and put it in the chat room. Your organization, what happened when it came specifically to the IRS, for those that didn't read your article?
Well, we're the American Academy for Constitutional Education. I started this organization about 4 years ago, really with the focus of being limited government freedom, framework of the Constitution, and really how people can restore America back to its foundation. That's the essence of the message. In November of 2011, our organization applied to the IRS for nonprofit status. And we waited until September of 2012 when we finally got a response back from them. And it was an entire litany of questions. And this is when it really began to smell a little bit odd. We knew something wasn't quite right, because the essence of those questions went to individuals that I had affiliated with in the past. Think people like Glenn Beck. I've done some work for him in the past out in Texas at Restore Love. And so they wanted to know about productions and seminars that I was involved with, They wanted to know about details of the work. How much money was I charging for my speaking engagements and other productions and seminars that I was actively involved with? How much money was I as the director going to make? What were the ultimate purpose of these engagements? And then they went onto my website, and we're doing a lot of research through my website, and they asked about a number of courses that were listed on the website and said, we want an outline of all of those courses. Any courses that you as the director have developed, we want an outline of all of those. We'd like to see samples. And they wanted to know a little bit about the book that I had authored, Your Nation is Saved, which you mentioned a little bit earlier. And they said, what does this book have to do with the objectives of the organization? And I've done some in the past I was under contract to do Constitution cruises with Glenn Beck. And so they wanted to know all of this information about the cruises. Again, how much money I was going to make, how much money was the organization going to make. It was that sort of thing. And I was, as I sat back, I said, none of these things, or at least very few of these things, have anything to do with whether we qualify as a nonprofit organization or not.
And that, you know, you just took the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to say, did any of these questions at all have anything to do with your nonprofit status? It was nothing more than digging into your personal life. I mean, the only thing I can figure, Shane, of all the things you just mentioned, maybe, and even that I'm not too sure about, you're the attorney, asking you how much you would make as the director of the organization, I could possibly see where salaries of everyone, not just you, might be a question that the IRS would have in granting, you know, nonprofit status to an organization. But outside of that, everything else you mentioned was BS.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. I can understand the question regarding monetary exchange between the organization, between me as the director, and wanting to have some information on that. I mean, if it's a nonprofit organization, you want to be sure that the individuals that are running the organization are treating it as just that. But other things about the curriculum and books and materials that we are using, it was beyond me why they were asking that question. And of course, now that the IRS scandal has really broken, it's very clear what was going on.
Now, here's a question. You mentioned you guys filed back in 2010, and it took 2 years for them to send you this questionnaire. During that time, did you try and contact them or ask them, hey, you know, I applied for this. What's going on? What's the holdup?
Numerous times. November of 2011 is... And just to be clear, November of 2011 is when we initially applied, and we got a response in September of 2012. During that 10-month period, we were contacting the IRS on a monthly basis, and they kept telling us, hey, we're looking at it, it's being reviewed. Of course, September, we get the response, and it wasn't really a response at all. It was a list of questions. We have responded. We responded within a couple of weeks, and here we are still waiting for a response from the IRS. Of course, this is the interesting thing, Gotti, I think you'll get a kick out of. We've been calling the IRS about once a week over the last couple of months saying, please let us know where our application is, what's the status. And we would either get a voice message or we would talk to an individual and they would tell us the agent will get back with you. Well, that never happened. Well, who did we get a call from Monday of this week?
What IRS. A shocker.
Yep. The IRS says, hey, they told us, you will get an answer from us within 2 to 4 weeks on whether or not we're granting your nonprofit status.
What
imagine
a shocker.
That.
And, you know, it's funny. How many different election cycles from the time you applied until, well, now you still haven't gotten status, how many elections have there been through this whole period?
Well, let's see, it was November 2011, so we were dealing with one major election cycle, which
was the president.
That by itself, exactly right.
But then you had all the local, sort of, being in Arizona, you know, you had local runs, and you had the off-year, you know, non-presidential year election of Congress.
Right. From my perspective, this was an attempt to take us out of the game to a degree. I mean,
exactly.
We're not the only organization. You've got all these Tea Party groups. Why were they discriminated against, and why were they scrutinized as heavily as they were? From my perspective, this is intimidation, it's harassment, and they took significant players or potentially significant players out of the game for a significant period of time, probably in the most important time in this country's history, where individuals and groups and entities were trying to garner the necessary resources to fight the battle, our organization included. We had numerous people, groups, organizations, and businesses that had come to us and say, we want to give you money, we want to give you resources because we believe in what you're doing, but you don't have your tax-exempt status. When's that going to happen? So we lost out on significant resources during that time, and it's that very issue that is moving us in the direction of actually filing a lawsuit against the IRS.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. Well, here's the point, and you knew exactly what I was alluding to. The major election that occurred during that time was the presidential election, and given that they're saying that this was upwards of 400 different organizations that all in one way or another were either conservative or Tea Party aligned, it makes one wonder if the election wouldn't have had a different outcome had all of these groups had their nonprofit status and were able to do more.
Yeah, and I don't think you can say that you can't just stand back and say, well, of course it wouldn't have impacted the election. I think you're exactly right. I believe that with what we're doing in this country right now, which really started in 2008, 2009 timeframe, where the Tea Party started to come together, conservative coalitions, the Republican clubs to a degree getting their act together, and the momentum is clearly pushing in our direction. And during that 2010-2011 time period, you had Tea Parties that were doing significant work, and to take 400 of those organizations out of the fight to a certain degree is absolutely disturbing, and I believe that it could have truly influenced the outcome of the election.
Absolutely. There's not a doubt in my mind when you consider that number of organizations out there all working towards the same goal. It's just mind-boggling. You know, I was mentioning before you came on the air, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen to us or not. Hopefully you didn't and you were eating dinner with your family. But I was mentioning, you know, I write articles. And one of the magazines, which is an internet organization that picks up my articles every week, was editing them and changing them. Wherever I mentioned the word Obama, they would change it to administration. And I finally had this huge argument with the president of this magazine on the phone explaining, you know, you got to stop doing this. I am quoting him, or I am quoting exactly, you know, something he did or said. And, you know, when I would talk about Israel or things that happened between Benjamin Netanyahu and Obama, they would take the entire sentence out or change it to from Obama, the administration. And she finally admitted to me, and I'm not mentioning their name because she's still concerned, obviously, that throughout 2010 and 2011, their team from this internet magazine, which is a very conservative-leaning magazine, their team was called into the IRS offices not once but twice and threatened that their 501c4 status would be pulled if they continued to, quote, attack the president. So they were, you know, we're talking about freedom of speech. We're talking about journalism. They were so afraid that they wouldn't even let me print my article the way I wrote it.
That is what's so disturbing, and that's the battle that we all are fighting against. Is, right, we have Americans that talk about the Constitution and they talk about freedom. Even those in government in this current administration talk about freedom, but what they really mean is you're free to do anything you want so long as we agree with it, and so long as you say the things that we agree with. That's not the America. That's not the America that the framers designed and put together, and these sorts of things are under severe attack, and we together have to continue to link arms and fight this battle aggressively and stand on principle, because we do truly have the winning arguments, freedom, limited government, the Constitution. Those are the winning arguments, the essence of the winning arguments, and we need to continue to make those arguments, because those who are not politically active, slowly but surely, they will come on board, but we have to convince them in ways that really are non-conventional, thinking outside the box, getting them excited, bringing in that entertainment component, sort of like what we were talking about a little earlier with the music, finding ingenious ways to communicate our message so that we can truly take this country back.
Man, Reese, where's our applause button at? That was right on the money. That was so right on the money. You know, we talked about.
There it is.
Thank you, Reese. We talk about, you know, every week, and this is a little unusual for me. I mean, the only other time that I've had someone on that wasn't directly related to national security would have been the producer of the Atlas Shrugged movies. And I really believe that this particular instance is related to our national security, because we're talking about changing the way America works from the way it's supposed to work. And that has everything to do with our national security. So this is so important. You know, we were talking about Benghazi in the first hour, and of course you've got the AP phone grabs, and now you've got the IRS coming. What do you think, Shane? What do you think is actually going to happen with this? Because I'll tell you what scares the hell out of me is that none of this is going to attach itself to Obama. He's never going to go through impeachment. And probably, if we don't get our act together, we being, you know, conservatives in this country, we're probably looking at the next 4 years after him being Hillary. And that scares the daylights out of me.
That is a legitimate concern. Let me take a step back and note something that the Democrats do very, very well. They do it better than conservatives. They do it better than the libertarians. They message very, very well. They communicate their ideas very well. I mean, if you remember back in 2007, 2008, when President Obama was moving forward, the best thing he did, the most brilliant thing he did, was he hired a marketer that knew how to brand their message, came up with the idea hope and change. Yeah. And that's all. He just got behind the podium and yelled hope and change. And you have all of these young kids in America saying, hope and change? That sounds great. Where's the party at? And they were literally having a party. They did that. They were absolutely brilliant. And here we are, Republicans and conservatives and libertarians over here scratching our heads saying, why don't they believe our message? Well, because we don't communicate our message very well. And so when you talk about Benghazi and you talk about the IRS scandal, really it's going to require Americans to stand up and say, enough is enough, and really mean it, and push our congressmen to move forward with impeachment proceedings. Now, do I believe that Obama could be impeached? Well, we certainly can bring the articles of indictment through the House. We have the numbers there. The Senate is where we've got the problems.
Exactly.
But my belief is that if this thing is blown wide open, Benghazi, and it's very clear that he knew what was going on and told those people to stand down, that's going to be very, very difficult for a Democrat to step up and say, oh, he really didn't do anything wrong. This isn't worthy of impeachment. I think as these congressmen continue to try and blow this thing wide open, and they do an effective job of doing just that, I think there's a remote possibility that could happen. If it doesn't happen, I don't know what else can be done to get this guy out of office, because the Americans continue to be duped that this guy is absolutely innocent in all this. The IRS, who's he blaming? He's blaming the IRS. He's saying, oh, it was on my watch, but I didn't know about it. What did
exactly.
He do with Benghazi? I mean,
yeah,
he continues to play the I'm innocent card. Are you a leader of the greatest nation in the country, or are you a follower? It sounds like you're a follower because you continue to blame everybody else in the administration but yourself. And the American people need to stop being duped by that.
It's amazing how much his advisors all were aware of these different things, but it never got to him. You know, it just – I mean, we know for fact. And, you know, I had mentioned at the top of the first hour, Shane, I've got an interview that I did with President Obama, which I was going to play tonight. If you want to stick for it, it's only 7 minutes long because I was only given five and we ran over a little bit. But I want to play an interview where we talked about Benghazi and the IRS and all these different things with Obama. And if you want to hear it, I don't know how much time you have. It's about 7 minutes, and I can play it before we go on break.
We'd love to hear it.
Okay. All right. Reese, where's my Reese? Reese, there she is. Reese.
Yes.
Hello. I know you're busy with the chat room. I'm going to go ahead and hit the audio for my interview with Obama. Everybody pay attention. This is an exclusive. I got 5 minutes with the man, and you're going to love it. So listen to his remarks and his comments and what he says, and we will be right back after this interview. Mr. President, wow, I'm actually nervous. I can't believe this. I want to thank you for taking time out and you know, to with part of your new transparency and what's going on right now, you wanted to give a somewhat unknown a chance to do a one-on-one interview, and I just can't thank you enough. I really appreciate it.
I want to thank you. Got it.
Well, don't thank me so fast there. You haven't heard any of my questions. I'm certainly not what you would call mainstream media, and I'm not sure you'll be thanking me by the end of this interview.
I've just got to say.
Now, hang on a second, okay? I know it's not proper etiquette to interrupt the president, but let me ask my first question before you start off on your talking points. Since you've been in office, there has been so many people of the Muslim faith that you have placed into high positions, and, you know, others are looking at, you know, your wedding band and the fact that you grew up in a madrasa, and then there's the Benghazi situation. I mean, we really have to wonder, are you a Muslim, a closet Muslim? What's the story here?
I'm not the strapping young Muslim socialist that I used to be.
Whoa, hold on a second. So you're actually admitting that you used to be, you said used to be a Muslim, and I didn't even mention socialist. Okay, this is fantastic. Let's go on to what's happening here today and now. You've got the AP phone record scandal. You've got the IRS scandal where they're targeting not only conservative organizations, but Jewish organizations. And, of course, we've got the Benghazi situation. So I want to kind of dive into all that right away.
Here's what we know. Americans died in Benghazi. What we also know is clearly they were not in a position where they were adequately protected. The day after it happened, I acknowledged that this was an act of terrorism.
With all due respect, Mr. President, no, you didn't say that. That's a bunch of bullshit, and you know it. You might be able to get away with that on CNN with Christy Crowley, but I'm not going to do that type of interview unless you mince words. I have a transcript right here of exactly what it is and how you said it. What you said was no acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation. You were referring right after a paragraph where you talked about 9/11. You were not talking about Benghazi, so don't try and play semantics with me at this interview.
Got it. I will never apologize.
No, I didn't think so. That far be it from you to apologize for anything. But, you know, the bottom line you just said is four people died in Benghazi. Okay? And quite frankly, you knew darn well that it wasn't about a video. This was nothing more than a cover-up, and I want to know what you knew and when you knew it.
What we have been very clear about throughout was that immediately after this event happened, we were not clear who exactly had carried it out, how it had been, how it had occurred, what the motivations were. It happened at the same time as we had seen attacks on U.S. embassies in Cairo as a consequence of this film. And nobody understood exactly what was taking place during the course of those first few days.
You sound a little bit nervous. You were kind of stuttering there in the beginning of that answer. You're going to stick to this. You didn't know about it. It really amazes me. And I want to say, because I can hear it in my headphones, I appreciate the fact that you've got your cameraman here. I would really appreciate the fact if my photo isn't all over the place with you. But, you know, having said that, if we could kind of maybe make his camera a little bit quieter or ask him to stop taking pictures, I'd appreciate it. You're going to stick to this story of I didn't know. You know, out there, everybody and their grandmother is comparing you to Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. I know nothing. I didn't see anything. I didn't even get up this morning. You don't know anything about the IRS. You don't know anything. How is it that all your advisors and all your people know about this, and you seem to be the last one to find out, if at all? I find it a little bit hard to believe. No, actually, you know what? I don't find it hard to believe. I think you're lying. You are lying to everyone, Mr. President, because I do not believe that the White House advisors were aware of the IRS. You've got me so angry I can't even think straight. Your White House advisors were aware of the AP situation, your attorney general, and you keep falling back on the same thing. You can't talk about it because it's under investigation. You won't talk about it because you didn't know about it. How much stuff, what do you know?
I'm not familiar with this.
No. I know you're not familiar with it. You know nothing. You saw nothing. I get that. Okay, let's move on. Talk to me about the execution of this Benghazi cover-up. I mean, everybody knows it's a cover-up.
Who executes some sort of cover-up or effort to tamp things down for 3 days?
3 days? What in the hell are you talking about 3 days? It's been 8 months. This is just now coming to a head. Thank God, finally. Oh, pardon me, Mr. President. Thank Allah. Finally, this is coming to light. All right. Let me just take it down a notch because I shouldn't be raising my voice at the president. Can we just be frank here for a minute? Can you be honest with me and tell me honestly, frankly, what would motivate you? What good comes to America or the American people with you doing this?
Frankly, has a lot to do with political motivations.
Political motivations? You're going to sit here and tell me that all this is because of your political... You're in your second term. You can't run again. What are you trying to do? Become the head of the caliphate?
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, there's no need to drop the F-bomb on my show. The rabbi gets away with that enough. But I apologize. Maybe that was a little out of line asking if you wanted to be the head of the caliphate. Let's just be honest here, Mr. President. I mean, it appears to me that there's all these things are going on. I mean, you can't deny that there's some sort of scandal or even better, a cover-up. And why? How are you letting this happen?
Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
It's getting too complicated for you. Maybe you should have thought about that before you ran for office. I mean, granted, yeah, I know you were only a community organizer and, you know, then became a state senator. And, yeah, we all know the history. But don't you think you should have thought of that beforehand? We're getting nowhere with this. Obviously, you're just going to continue with the I don't knows and it's too complicated. It's under investigation and dropping the F-bomb. So, you know, I appreciate it. I see our time's about up, and your people are getting a little bit angry with me over there. So I just want to thank you, Mr. President, for giving me the opportunity to speak with you and to ask you some questions. And just want to say thanks from everybody here at America Akbar.
Thank you. Got it.
Okay, all kidding aside, as humorous as that was and as fun as it was to make, those were his words. And
well, Johnny, first I have to say you have a career in comedy. That was beautifully done. That was great.
That was thrown together. You know, I did a new montage of all of these different answers, and I was like, you know, I could throw questions in there, and I came up with the idea, so I just threw that together this afternoon.
I love it.
Thank you, Shane. I appreciate it. But those were his answers. I mean, this is basically what an actual interview with this man would be like if somebody had the cojones to actually corner him and say, wait a minute, you can't get away with it. He would be like, well, I didn't know. It's complicated. I didn't know.
And then he'd be angry because you're questioning him.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the amazing thing is if any one of us did this in our jobs, we would be fired. And yet this is the most powerful man in the country who's leading the United States who can get away with this. It just turns common sense on its head, what's going on here. It's just absurd.
It is beyond absurd, and it's frightening because, you know, at many of my speeches, and I give lectures about 9/11 and about terrorism, and that's my forte, that's my thing, Sharia law, Islamic law, Islam, Muslims, the whole bit. That's how I got started in this. And whenever I give a lecture, I talk to people about how far we've come in the last 10, 11 years since 9/11, and I say, you know, if I had told you on the 9th of September, on the 10th of September, that we were going to be attacked and they'd bring down the World Trade Center, you would have told me I was crazy. And then I go into what's happening now. Had I said that was going to happen, nobody would have believed it. And that's where we're at. I mean, if you look at what this man and this administration is getting away with, it never would have happened before now. I don't know what turned this country on its head so far. I mean, is it because they're afraid to speak out because he's black? Oh, my God, you're racist. Are they afraid to speak out because... I just don't get it. I mean, there are so many, you know, Fast and Furious. That's been swept under the proverbial prayer rug. There was a Border Patrol agent that was killed, and we don't hear about it. It's just amazing. One scandal after another, and he's like Teflon. Nothing is sticking to this guy.
Well, it's really sad because the examples that you just gave are nothing more and nothing less than tyranny. It's really, this is what tyranny feels like. And whether it's Mayor Bloomberg with his 32-ounce strings or the United States with their gun ban, or Mayor Bloomberg and some of the Boston officials talking about cameras on the streets. What has to happen in America before we finally wake up and recognize that we are not in the government's best interest? The individuals that are in power right now are concerned with one thing: how do they win the next election?
Exactly.
And the freedom fighters have to stand up and truly educate the general public and let them know this is not the kind of government you're interested in bargaining for. Let us tell you what you're really interested in, because every man and woman truly desires to be free. Just very few will do anything about it. And we've got to continue to do those things to make very clear what government is attempting to do when they impose these various bans or these various restrictions, or when they do things like you just mentioned with 9/11 and the IRS. You know, what are they really doing when they cover those things? They're avoiding responsibility. And so we've just got to continue forward with the message of America, and I'm convinced that as we move forward, the momentum is clearly on our side. We will win this battle. It was going to take time. I mean, it's not going to happen in a year or 2 years. It's truly going to take time to restore this country back to its constitutional moorings. It took 100 years, from my perspective, to get to the problem that we're now experiencing. It's going to take time to reverse course.
No, you know, you're right, Shane, but what worries me is, although it may have taken 100 years to see the beginning of it, because it's certainly 100 years in wasn't like it is now. I mean, this is the worst it's ever been. There is no doubt. This is not conspiracy theory. I mean, who would have thought you'd have the Speaker of the House make a statement like we need to pass it before we know what's in it and get away with that? I mean, just the stupidity, and the Americans are just sitting there going, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And it's, where are these people coming from? They vote. They bleed. That is really scary.
Yeah, I mean, that is important. When you look at the Senate and when you look at the various congressmen and the statements that they make, you wonder how in the world these people actually got elected. I mean, Jim Clyburn comes to mind. He's the man who says, well, what do you mean I can't move forward with a law like health care? Where in the Constitution does it say that I can't do it? He's turned the very idea of the Constitution and limited government on its head. Or you have a guy like Senator Harkin who says, we've finally given the American people another unalienable right. We've moved forward with health care. The government doesn't give you rights, and yet he sold that bill of goods to the people. You have people yelling and screaming, yeah, that's right. Or you've got a guy like the former Congressman Phil Hare, when he's asked about health care. He says, you know what, when it comes to health care, I really don't care about the Constitution. Well, wait a second. What you took an oath. You took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. What does that actually mean? I mean, so you have all these people in government that are saying the things that the American people want to hear, and they continue to win election after election after election. And if that sort of thing is not going to stop until we really explain and educate the general public as to what it really means to live in a society that embraces limited government, and to live in a society that claims to be free. And this is going to be a long, hard-fought battle.
And you just reminded me of something even just as scary, if not scarier, and I believe it was Justice Ginsburg who made the comment when Mubarak was overthrown and they were starting their new government, that, you know, if I were writing my Constitution today, I wouldn't use America's Constitution as a draft. I mean, it's what? This is a Supreme Court justice who doesn't believe in the American Constitution? I mean, it boggles the mind that these people are so high up. I don't know how you sleep at night. I certainly don't.
Well, you bring up another great example with Justice Ginsburg. Her comment is very disturbing. Egypt is looking at adopting, or at that time was looking to adopt and ratify their own constitution, and here she is saying you should look to the South African Constitution. Did she even read the South African Constitution? I've read the South African Constitution, and it's not what Egypt or any other country wants. I mean, it guarantees individuals the right to housing, the right to food, the right to water, the right to health care. Who's going to pay for that? Right? That's not a free society when you start guaranteeing those goods to the people. Somebody's got to pay for that, and that's not a free society. And yet you have one of the most powerful people in our country, namely Justice Ginsburg, advocating that they embrace that sort of constitution. And guess what? Egypt did just that. Egypt's constitution is very similar to South Africa's, and look at all the problems they're experiencing. They don't have a constitution that's...
Has a lot to do with the Muslim Brotherhood, but don't even get me started on that one.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. When you look at the Egyptian constitution, they don't believe in freedom of religion. They believe in the freedom of religion that is adopted by those in power. To everyone else, to hell with you. I mean, they don't believe in freedom. That constitution does not embrace freedom. And yet, Justice Ginsburg, you know, kudos to her for encouraging Egypt to look to a constitution like South Africa. They got what they deserved, if you will.
You're absolutely right. What do you think, you know, Shane, one of the things that we talk about here week in and week out is educating yourself to the listeners, that they need to educate themselves, but then take what they've learned. It's their responsibility to go out and educate others and to contact their representatives, both local and federal. I mean, beyond that, is there anything you can pass on with your experience to help bring us back to the America we want or that used to
be?
Well,
holding your officials accountable is a top priority, and I actually teach several seminars just on how to do that, how to question candidates, how to hold their feet to the fire. But my bigger issue here is I'm not interested in fighting the election cycle battle as a top priority. We've been doing that for too long in this country, and look what we have. I'm interested in fighting the cultural battle for the hearts and minds of Americans, and really we've almost come full circle at this point. The way you fight a cultural battle is to take back the schools, is to take back the entertainment industry. You've got to take those things, and until we do those things, we will continue to see the results that we've seen from election to election to election. I mean, think about this for a moment. Every election, the Democrats, they win. And who gets upset about it? Well, the Republicans get upset about it, and over the next 4 to 6 years, they rally the troops. And they go back, and 48 years later, they win that election. And the Democrats get upset, and they rally the troops for the next 48 years, and then they win. So it's this pendulum swinging back and forth over and over and over again. The only way you stop that from happening is by engaging in the cultural battle. If the conservatives never want to lose another election again, you educate the culture and teach them what it truly means to be free. Teach them why the Constitution is the answer and not the problem. Teach them why the principles of limited government are critical. Teach them about state sovereignty, states' rights, and these principles of federalism. Teach them about those things and do it in a way that is exciting, enticing, inspiring, motivational, and you'll change this country. Just as an aside, I go into the public schools out here in Arizona, and I traveled extensively doing this. And I bring in things like I have a burning constitution. I open it up, and the book lights on fire. And I do that just as an educational tool because those kids think, oh, someone's coming in to talk about the Constitution. Well, I bring a book in that lights on fire and say, when you talk about the Constitution, when you talk about freedom, this is exciting. You wouldn't believe what it does to kids in these schools. They're running down the hall saying, we want more. That's what I'm talking about. We've got to take this message and articulate it in a way that is exciting, that these kids want to be a part of, that our culture wants to be a part of. And until we do that, I'm telling you, we're doing – this is just going to be a revolving door of Democrats and Republicans and who's mobilized the most people as opposed to simply fighting the educational battle.
And that's something I can say.
I'm sorry, Lisa, I found the button.
That's all right. That's something I've been saying is that if you want to change how things are at the ballot box, you have to change society. And how did they do it in the first place? They did it through the culture, through the arts.
Absolutely.
Through manipulating people through the arts in various ways, whether it's through the TV, through the music, through books, you name it. However they've done it through time, and they have been very patient. But, you know, you saw a huge burst of it in the 50s, 60s, and 70s using the arts to manipulate society into and accepting the ideology. Well, that's up to us to bring that, you know, swing that pendulum. But we can't change it in the ballot box because, you know, as much as you want to scream and yell at all these people that go to Washington, it's not going to matter if you're not changing the hearts and minds of the Americans.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. This is a cultural battle, and I really that's mm-hmm. the essence of our message with the Academy is the election cycle battle is important. We need to show up at the ballot box. But as you both have just said, we've got to fight the cultural battle. And when we take that on as a first priority, I think we'll see significant progress. We've seen great progress over the last 4 to 5 years. We really have. But if you want to see that explode a thousandfold, begin focusing on the culture. Things as simple as flying your flag out in your front yard day in and day out are little things that can truly make a difference. It's those little things that will have this exponential effect on changing the culture. I mean, think mm-hmm. about it. Happy Days. You think about the Happy Days theme song. Why do people understand and recognize Happy Days theme song? Very simple. It became a part of our culture. We have to do the same thing with the message of America. Make it become a part of our culture, and you do it in part by taking back the media.
Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you just mentioned, Reese, were you going to do Madison Rising's Star-Spangled Banner on the next break?
No, I was going to do Chris Ross's song, Liberty.
Oh, okay. Shane, I don't know how much time you have, and I asked you this before. If you want to hang on at least through the break, you can listen to who Chris Ross is, because Liberty is a great song. And you're welcome to stay till the end of the program. That's totally up to you, depending on what your time constraints are.
Yeah, we'd love to. I've got to head out in a little bit here. So I'm more than able to stay on. We're heading out of town tomorrow for a big engagement, so I've got to get some things ready to go. But I'm more than happy to hang on. I'd love to hear it.
All right. Oh, yeah. Reese, if you'll go into that, it'll give me a chance to run and grab some tea so I can make it through the last 10, 15 minutes. And, go ahead and play some Chris Ross. Let everybody know where they can find him.
Okay. Well, this is Chris Ross. This is Liberty. He also wrote another great song for Glenn Beck's Restoring Honor a couple of years ago that both you and I went to, which is another fabulous song. But he has a lot of great songs. And this is off of his, I can't remember which album. But you can find him over there, over on CD Baby. He's under Chris Ross 1, I do believe. And here's the song, Liberty. Enjoy.
How can we pay our debts back? How can we wrangle from this mess? Take all the chains off our back, loosen the noose around our neck. Time to get busy, people. Time that we take our country back. All the same road for so long, soon we'll be overrun by facts.
Survivalist, Godfather Don Corleone, former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Secretary of the Department of Bitch Slapping Hilda, Darth Vader, even President Richard Nixon popped in. So come visit the hottest place for happy hour every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, and show the world that you have an American view.
Everybody, this is Dave Bray of Madison Rising, and you're listening to America at Bar with Scott Hayden.
Kapara Alai. All right, back to English. Let me lower the volume on Sarita Dot a little bit there. And Reese, you wanted to make a correction on the .com for Chris Ross.
Right, how you can get to Chris Ross. Right now his website's still under construction or reconstruction, I should say. But you can find him over on CD Baby. Just do a search for Chris Ross. He has two albums out, The Story of Freedom and I Believe. And because there's another Chris Ross over there, this is the one that you want. It's the Story of Freedom and I Believe albums. And the song Liberty and Others, I use from the Story of Freedom. But he's a fabulous artist and right. A lot of great music there.
He's at cdbaby.com/artist/ChrisRoss1. And I think originally you had posted 1-2, which was accidental. So it's Chris Ross 1.
Yep.
Right, right. Okay, all right. As long as we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Shane. Thanks for hanging on through the break.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And that's our big breaks around here. We're not as big as your radio station down there in Phoenix where you have real advertisers. We just we do all this for fun and never get anywhere.
Well, that's the best way to do it, doing this because you enjoy it and recognizing that you have an impact. And I want to tell you, I thank you for what you all are doing. This is a battle. We're all in it together. We all bring different talents and ideas to the table, but we all agree on the basic foundation of America. So we need to continue to push our message in unity with the belief that we truly can change the country back to the greatness that it once embraced.
You're absolutely right. And I'll tell you, I just did a lecture two nights ago, PowerPoint presentation that I wrote on a comparison of Sharia, which is Islamic law, and the Constitution, because I'm tired of hearing people on the air say how it's compatible. And I did a breakdown of our Constitution versus Sharia, and I'll have to see if I can't figure out a way to send that to you, because I'd love your opinion, being the constitutional scholar that you are. I'd really love your feedback on it.
Yeah, I'd love to give you my email address. I think you've got my website. Would love to get that information, as well as some of that information on Madison Rising. Would love that, but this whole debate with the Constitution and looking to other sources and giving those sources some weight. You know, the last time in this country we did that was when we were putting our Constitution together. The last time I checked, we weren't putting a Constitution together. The Constitution already exists. It makes it very clear the rules that we must play by. So this whole nonsensical notion that we should be looking to other sources or giving other sources outside the parameters of our Constitution some credibility is absolutely absurd. And from my perspective, it's an attempt to really subvert the very principles embraced by our Constitution.
You're absolutely right. I couldn't say it better myself. And I want to introduce you real quick, and I know you've got to go, and we've only got about 4 minutes left. Rabbi, where were you? You missed the whole show.
Well, it was Shavuot.
That's what I thought, yeah. Actually, and it took Ann in the chat room to remind me that it was Shavuot, and that's why you weren't here. Our guest is Shane Krauser. Shane, if you would, real quick, give your website address and the name of your organization again.
It's the American Academy for Constitutional Education. Our website is aafce.com. That's AAF as in freedom, CE.com. And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media outlets that we utilize.
Well, the rabbi was running late. You missed a great show, Rabbi. It'll give you a reason to listen to the podcast. And Reese, you just put AAFCE.com in the chat room, so we've linked you out. Shane, before you leave, what I'll do is I'll put you in the back end with Reese, and you guys can exchange email addresses, and that way you and I can stay in touch, and you can talk to Reese about Madison Rising.
I look forward to it. An absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, and I want you to come back again. This has been a fabulous, fabulous. Man, the hour just flew by. I've got so much more. I would love to keep you here, but I know you've got to go and you weren't planning on staying this long, so I can't thank you enough. And, Reese, go ahead and take Shane off air in the back end, and you can talk to him and get the info you need.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Shane. Rabbi, how are you, sir?
I'm good.
Since when can you not go on the air? Because it's Shavuot. It's not like it's
Well, wait a minute. What is Shavuot? And what is the major command for Shavuot?
To listen to Gotti.
To be joyful. Now, why would I want to come on onto the show during Shavuot and get all ticked off when we're supposed to be joyful?
You wouldn't have gotten ticked off. You missed my interview with Barack Obama, and I'll have to play it for you. We'll play it again at the end of the show. So we've only got a minute left. You really did miss a great show with our last minute guest who came on. He was talking about his organization.
Well, I'll definitely catch it on the podcast.
Yeah, just because the name Constitution is in his organization and what they've been through with the IRS. It has been a heck of a show. It went by really fast. But as soon as we say our goodbyes, I'll play for you in the podcast portion, and we won't be live anymore. I'll play for you my interview with President Obama. I think you'll get a kick out of it.
We'll see about that.
Uh-oh. Well, it's definitely something that's joyful.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Even though I told you that I was going to be meeting with the president and having this interview, I did mention you during the interview.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
So I mean, that's about the last thing you need to be doing.
Well, we got a couple seconds left. Everybody, we will see you next week. We are already into our podcast time. So, hello, Reese and Shane, if you're still there, hello again. Oh, they're still talking to each other. Right.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and play this for you, and you got to hear this interview. It's pretty funny. Oh, there's Shane. We should keep some back and
you
forth.
You caught us in the middle of a sentence. That wasn't right.
I didn't hit the button. It looked like you guys were in mute. So not a big deal. We're actually off the air right now, Shane, but anything we do say is still being recorded. It'll be on the podcast.
Very good.
So
she was just giving me email addresses and a little bit about the information that you are going to send my way, and anything that I can do to help you all in the future, you just let me know.
I seriously, seriously would love to have you back. It has been fabulous. We didn't even touch on what your knowledge is with the Constitution. And from when I read your bio, I would love to pick your brain. So definitely.
Absolutely would love to do it.
Love to have you back and teach some of our listeners a little bit more about the Constitution and what this country is really supposed to be like.
Yeah, I would be honored to do it. You just let me know when, and we'll make it happen.
That is great. Thank you so much for being here. I was just going to play for the rabbi my interview with the president. Since I mentioned
it's good stuff. Well, let me, Reese, I didn't quite get your email address. You said it's R-E-E-S-E at, and then that's where I...
Yeah, Gadi Adelman, G-A-D-I-A-D-E-L-M-A-N .com.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, Reese.
All right, very good.
She's got
her own. I'm working on the email right now.
Okay, well, very good. That sounds great. Is there anything else I can do for you at this moment?
No, go and have a great time wherever you're headed this weekend, and thank you so much for this last-minute interview.
Hey, thank you all as well. I really appreciate it. Take care. Keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you. You too. We'll be in
touch.
Thank
you. We will. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Thank you. Good
Bye-bye.
Night.
Okay, Rabbi, you got 7 minutes handy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. I was given a 5-minute time limit to interview the president, and we went over a little bit. But here's the interview, which I think you'll get a kick out of. And I'm going to leave the mics open. I'd love to hear the reaction. So here's the interview with the president. Mr. President, wow, I'm actually nervous. I can't believe this. I want to thank you for taking time out and, you know, with part of your new transparency and what's going on right now, you wanted to give a somewhat unknown a chance to do a one-on-one interview, and I just can't thank you enough. I really appreciate it.
I want to thank you. Got it.
Well, don't thank me so fast there. You haven't heard any of my questions. I'm certainly not what you would call mainstream media, and I'm not sure you'll be thanking me by the end of this interview.
I've just got to say.
Now, hang on a second, okay? I know it's not proper etiquette to interrupt the president, but let me ask my first question before you start off on your talking points. Since you've been in office, there has been so many people of the Muslim faith that you have placed into high positions, and, you know, others are looking at, you know, your wedding band and the fact that you grew up in a madrasa, and then there's the Benghazi situation. I mean, we really have to wonder, are you a Muslim, a closet Muslim? What's the story here?
I'm not the strapping young Muslim socialist that I used to be.
Whoa, hold on a second. So you're actually admitting that you used to be. You said used to be a Muslim, and I didn't even mention socialist. Okay, this is fantastic. Let's go on to what's happening here today and now. You've got the AP phone record scandal. You've got the IRS scandal where they're targeting not only conservative organizations but Jewish organizations. And, of course, we've got the Benghazi situation. So I want to kind of dive into all that right away.
Here's what we know. Americans died in Benghazi. What we also know is clearly they were not in a position where they were adequately protected. The day after it happened, I acknowledged that this was an act of terrorism.
With all due respect, Mr. President, no, you didn't say that. That's a bunch of bullshit, and you know it. You might be able to get away with that on CNN with Christy Crowley, but I'm not going to do that type of interview and let you mince words. I have a transcript right here of exactly what it is and how you said it. What you said was no acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation. You were referring right after a paragraph where you talked about 9/11. You were not talking about Benghazi, so don't try and play semantics with me at this interview.
Got it. I will never apologize.
No, I didn't think so. That far be it from you to apologize for anything. But, you know, the bottom line you just said is 4 people died in Benghazi. Okay? And quite frankly, you knew darn well that it wasn't about a video. This was nothing more than a cover-up, and I want to know what you knew and when you knew it.
What we have been very clear about throughout was that immediately after this event happened, we were not clear who exactly had carried it out, how it had occurred, what the motivations were. It happened at the same time as we had seen attacks on U.S. embassies in Cairo as a consequence of this film. And nobody understood exactly what was taking place during the course of those first few days.
You sound a little bit nervous. You were kind of stuttering there in the beginning of that answer. You're going to stick to this. You didn't know about it. It really amazes me. And I want to say, because I can hear it in my headphones, I appreciate the fact that you've got your cameraman here. I would really appreciate the fact if my photo isn't all over the place with you. But, you know, having said that, if we could kind of maybe make his camera a little bit quieter or ask him to stop taking pictures, I'd appreciate it. You're going to stick to this story of I Didn't Know. You know, out there, everybody and their grandmother is comparing you to Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. I know nothing. I didn't see anything. I didn't even get up this morning. You don't know anything about the IRS. You don't know anything. How is it that all your advisors and all your people know about this, and you seem to be the last one to find out, if at all? I find it a little bit hard to believe. No, actually, you know what? I don't find it hard to believe. I think you're lying. You are lying to everyone, Mr. President, because I do not believe that the White House advisors were aware of the IRS. You've got me so angry I can't even think straight. Your White House advisors were aware of the AP situation, your attorney general, and you keep falling back on the same thing. You can't talk about it because it's under investigation. You won't talk about it because you didn't know about it. How much stuff, what do you know?
I'm not familiar with this.
No. I know you're not familiar with it. You know nothing. You saw nothing. I get that. Okay, let's move on. Talk to me about the execution of this Benghazi cover-up. I mean, everybody knows it's a cover-up.
Who executes some sort of cover-up or effort to tamp things down for 3 days?
3 days? What in the hell are you talking about 3 days? It's been 8 months. This is just now coming to a head. Thank God, finally. Oh, pardon me, Mr. President. Thank Allah. Finally, this is coming to light. All right. Let me just take it down a notch, because I shouldn't be raising my voice at the president. Can we just be frank here for a minute? Can you be honest with me and tell me, honestly, frankly, what would motivate you? What good comes to America or the American people with you doing this?
Frankly, has a lot to do with political motivations.
Political motivations? You're going to sit here and tell me that all this is because of your political... You're in your second term. You can't run again. What are you trying to do? Become the head of the caliphate?
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
Whoa. Okay, there's no need to drop the F-bomb on my show. The rabbi gets away with that enough. But I apologize. Maybe that was a little out of line, asking if you wanted to be the head of the caliphate. Let's just be honest here, Mr. President. I mean, it appears to me that there's all these things are going on. I mean, you can't deny that there's some sort of scandal, or even better, a cover-up. And why? How are you letting this happen?
Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
It's getting too complicated for you. Maybe you should have thought about that before you ran for office. I mean, granted, yeah, I know you were only a community organizer and, you know, then became a state senator. And, yeah, we all know the history. But don't you think you should have thought of that beforehand? We're getting nowhere with this. Obviously, you're just going to continue with the I don't knows, and it's too complicated. It's under investigation and dropping the F-bomb, so... You know, I appreciate it. I see our time's about up, and your people are getting a little bit angry with me over there. So I just want to thank you, Mr. President, for giving me the opportunity to speak with you and to ask you some questions. And just want to say thanks from everybody here at America Akbar.
Thank you. Got it.
And there you have it, Rab.
How'd you get your name in there?
Oh, that was the hardest part. Do you know what I went through trying to find where he actually said Gotti?
Seriously, I mean, you must have really had to dig to find that.
Believe it or not, that was the easiest of all the things to find. What I did, he put somebody into office, one of his judges, that had prosecuted John Gotti. So when he was talking about that in the press conference introducing this person, he said, and they prosecuted John Gotti, and that's where I got the Gotti from.
There you go.
But, yeah, so did you like how I told him, you know, no F-bombs on my show. The rabbi gets away with that enough.
Yeah, I caught that. I definitely caught that, yeah. Oh, I just got one suggestion.
Uh-oh.
Read your text once in a while.
I've got a better suggestion. Rabbi, I don't have texting on my phone.
Oh, you got one of those phones.
So if you texted me, it's in the text universe somewhere, still spinning looking for Gotti because I don't get texts on my phone.
Oh, I actually texted you last evening and let you know that I, because at the end of Shavuot, and then we have, a longer Havdalah than usual,
yes.
And then we have the Ma'ariv service, and then tonight we also had the Kiddush Levana, which is the sanctification of the moon. So as soon as I finished that, I called in, which was about 5 minutes to go.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you did call in. I will have to give you, I've got a separate phone number that I get texts on. I know that sounds a little crazy, but I will explain it to you when I give you my text number.
No, actually, it really doesn't sound that crazy.
Well, I use, and I'll give them a free plug, I use Verizon, and what they want to charge me to add texting to my phone, because of the plan I have, I've been rolling over every 2 years for like the last 8 years, so I've got a really good cheap plan, but if I add texting, it's going to bump me up to like the outrageous prices of today. So I got a free Google Voice phone number that allows you free texting, and it forwards to my phone. So it's just used for texting only, and I'll have to give it to you because that's the only way I can get texts.
Okay, good enough.
So anybody who really cares about me has both phone numbers, unlike Reese, who doesn't have my text number, come to think of it.
Because I don't text.
Exactly.
Ah.
Another one. Reese and I are in the same boat there. We just don't do the texting.
And every time I get a text from somebody, I cringe because it costs me 10 cents to look at it.
Ooh, ow. So Zeta wants to know what you thought of his show.
I don't get Zeta's show. It doesn't come in my area. We'll have to talk to my cable provider on that one. Oh, boy. I'm going to have to go back and watch the Zeta podcast. You're catching me on a million things. Well, we're even. You missed tonight's show. I missed Zeta's show.
Okay. There you go.
Anyway, guys, as usual, to wrap it up, I feel bad since the rabbi just got here. But definitely go back and listen to the podcast, Rabbi, because it was definitely worth it. It was a great show, and the guest came through at the last minute and was awesome. So, definitely listen to the podcast. And we are going to wrap it up because it's almost 10:15 at this point, and the podcast has gone on now for an extra 15 minutes. So without further ado, even though we didn't get to play your intro, Rabbi, say goodnight, Rabbi.
Good night.
And say goodnight, Reese.
Good night, Reese.
We'll see everybody here next week. Thanks for everything from everybody at America Akbar. See you next Thursday, 8 p.m.